fails you. And everyone knows that laughter is the best medicine. So we've gone right to the first family of comedy, to the lady who wrote the book, Sandy C. Shore. Yes, that's her real name. Only a comedian would name their kid Sandy C. Shore. Well, what do you expect when your family owns the world-famous comedy store? If laughter's the best medicine, well, then Sandy, she's Dr. Feelgood. Hey, thanks for being here. Tonight, Sandy will check in with the world-famous comedy store to find out who's on stage and hear the inside story of what's really happening backstage and on the Hollywood Strip. She'll help you laugh and learn with some real news. And, of course, hide the dog biscuits because Sonny Shore is on the loose. He's smarter than Lassie and looks better than Ren-10-10. And this is one dog that knows his comedy. And now, here's the seashore that's not in your geography book. A lady with so much talent, she's worldwide at sandyshore.com. Welcome to Happy Hour with Sandy C. Shore.
Is it Thursday again? Hey, everybody, it's Sandy C. Shore. It's Happy Hour. Well, I have a wonderful show I'm very excited about. Of course, Tommy will be on in 1 minute. Dr. John J. Harper. We're really going to get into some amazing topics tonight. He's a futurist. He has a book out. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But first, let's welcome Tommy back. Tommy?
Hey, how you doing, Sandy?
Good. Yeah, we have a great show tonight coming up.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's put your thinking caps on because I have a feeling this is going to be, he's going to hit some subjects that are really difficult subjects, but I'm very excited about it.
That's cool.
And anyway, it's Thursday again.
Yes, here it is.
I cannot believe how fast the weeks roll by.
That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. What's happening up there on Sunset?
Well, we are, we're coming into a good weekend. We've actually got somebody new working out in here a little bit, Jamie Kennedy, who's been in a lot of movies and stuff like Scream, and he had his own show on television for a while called Jamie Kennedy Experience.
Yeah. What is he doing?
He's just working out in here and keeping his craft honed, and it's just been nice to have him around. These are a little couple of the people that are feeling comfortable to maybe come around now that your brother Paulie is around.
Right.
But your mom has given approval on it because we've had open forum conversations and. Said that he could come in and work out some, and that's cool.
That's great. He's very talented.
Yeah, and what, of course, my objective outside of him performing here would now be to try to get him booked to La Jolla sometime, too.
That would be great.
Yeah, it would be wonderful.
You mentioned also George Hamilton's son is now doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah, Ashley Hamilton.
He came in
and actually did a little bit on it. His parents are kind of two famous people. His mother is Elana Stewart, Rod Stewart's first wife.
Oh,
but she was actually, as I find out, married to George Hamilton first, and Ashley is the product of George Hamilton and her.
Mm-hmm. It's Hollywood for you.
And he's nice looking. So your mom's like, yeah, he adds a nice flavor to the show. What's that, Mitzi? Someone who looks good.
Well, how old is he?
But she watched him, and she liked the quality inside of him, and she's giving him time.
How old is he? I'm curious.
I'm not sure. I'd say probably about 27.
Okay. A lot of people are getting started in comedy when they're teenagers.
Yeah.
But I thought maybe he was that age. And how did Chelsea Handler's show go?
That went really well. Really, their benefit was great. It was full, and Chelsea's set was fun, and she was really warm to the people that were here, so it's nice.
Speaking of warm, the weather is warming up.
Yeah.
It's beautiful out here. And so I'm coming to you from San Diego, in case anybody doesn't know. And Tommy's on the Sunset Strip in Hollywood.
That's pretty nice here, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things are going very well.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
I have lots of dental appointments ahead of me. That's what I've been doing this week, going to the dentist.
Well, you get started on that, you know?
Yeah, I've got to take care of things.
Now, let me talk about the show down in La Jolla real briefly, too.
Okay.
It's kind of
a modern
show this weekend.
Are you sure you don't
want
to talk about the dentist? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. It's a modern show this weekend. We've got Ari Shaffir headlining down there. He's been with your mom for 10 years. And then we've got Rick Ingram, who's popular on MTV and on Punk'd and stuff like that. And also have a couple of local guys. Matt and Robert will be opening, and it's going to be a really, really good show. Ari's been opening for Joe Rogan all over the country.
Ah. Joe Rogan is the host of Fear Factor.
And host of UFC is what you should say, UFC.
The what?
He hosts that, and he's on that all the time.
And also, just to remind everyone that Naveed Mahboob,
mm-hmm.
one of my students this week, is in Bangladesh opening the first stand-up comedy club in India.
That is amazing,
that's
isn't
history.
It?
And that is, yeah, I'm just astounded by that.
Well, you should be.
Mm-hmm.
He started with you, too.
No, I started him for sure.
You gave him his skills to start with, and look where he is now.
Yep.
That's kind of comedy is so important. I just wanted to get that La Jolla show in there for anybody that's listening in that area down there.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm looking forward to it. And then, so the activity, everything seems to be going really well, despite what everybody's talking about with all the problems we're having with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, gas up here has gone up to, what, $3.50 I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's really bad right now.
And then the food, everything, I heard that in the last year food's gone up 30%.
Wow.
And our dollar is worth practically nothing. And, you know, we hear all this stuff and then all these foreclosures, but people need their comedy. And I think it's a really important contribution to society, especially during, you know, maybe this is going to be, the year's going to get rougher. I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, we've got a rough year waiting until this president changeover. This deficit wasn't going to do us any good no matter what.
Well, what do you think a new president's going to do? I mean, we're already in too deep. How do you get out of it?
No, there's ways to get out of it.
Like what?
You have to think about doing things a little bit differently. You know, going into this deficit is a strange thing for people that come from the Bush background who are all about money and power. That they would put the country into debt. What's their personal gain if the country they live in is in debt? Doesn't make sense.
Well,
a lot of people still seem to be doing well. It's what you're noticing is that even though these prices go up, a lot of people, especially in the area you are in too, and I see around here, have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So they just keep doing what they're doing.
Right.
Hurting. Who it always hurts.
It doesn't feel
the
Southern California doesn't feel too affected, except we've got thousands of houses in foreclosure. So
right.
There is, you know, definitely it's affected.
Yeah, all that way for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm noticing entertainment-wise, since where you and I are affiliated with the entertainment industry, that people are still spending their money on entertainment because they want to be entertained.
I haven't noticed any change in that at all.
No.
Not at all.
As a matter of fact, you know, here at the store, we're doing well, for this time of year, we always do. We're actually a teeny bit busier this year than we were this time last year.
Mm-hmm. It's good news.
Well, it is, but it also shows a behavioral pattern, too, in people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
huh.
We ride it out, right?
Yep, we do.
We're people. We go with it, and we do the best we can.
Yep. So, well, I'm very much looking forward to my upcoming guest, Dr. John J. Harper. He's a futurist, and he's got such a background that it's a little mind-boggling. So I'm very excited to have him on the show.
Right.
Even though it's called Happy Hour, he's I'm sure has some, you know, positive insight into what to do with our current state of the planet. I don't know how else to put
it. Anyone who would be a futurist or a psychic or anything would be telling us anything to try to help us, to give us guidelines how to make it better, right?
Correct.
It's not about looking at anything he says. If he says something that feels negative, it's not about being negative. It's about saying that if things could become more negative if we don't try to work on that not happening that way.
Yep. There's a lot of people that thrive on negativity, though.
Too many.
Yep. And if you look at the TV, there's just so much of that on there.
And the kids play the games where all they do is destroy things and blow things up and kill things, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know.
It's programming.
Very
and they, people. Someone forgot that when they went to go make their dollar from it, you know?
Mm-hmm. All about power. I heard it's not about money anymore. It's about power now.
Yeah. But money and power do go hand in hand at a point.
Notice my more serious approach tonight to the show.
Yeah.
So we're gonna bring on Dr. Harper here in a minute.
Okay.
But is there anything else coming up that Paulie's moving his office up into?
Paulie's getting involved in here, and he's gonna get onto all kinds of different things. He's gonna get some things edited. He's gonna get some things shot. He's gonna end up getting some cameras put in here to shoot some things and get some stuff. He's got plenty of plans. And he and your mom and your brother Peter, you know, Peter flew all the way out from Chicago for them to have a meeting over a weekend so they could talk about things. And I think they were like meetings up at the summit there, and they had some good meetings, and everybody agreed on everything, and so it's on a positive foot forward, hopefully.
Peter was in this weekend? How come
No, this wasn't this weekend. This was about a month ago.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
He just came in for that one weekend, and they all sat up and worked everything out.
I have three brothers, and I'm the only girl in the family, so I'm usually left out of things. And that's how it's been working. So when you're in the entertainment world, you communicate through your people.
Right.
And so I get all my information through Tommy.
That's right.
And so you're listening to me on Thursdays talking to Tommy, and Tommy's catching me up on what's going on.
Right.
So just to let you know, that's how it works.
It is. It is the way it works.
It's really odd. We don't, like, call each other directly. It's like your people will call my people.
That's right. Isn't that
that's
a funny world?
I don't know any other way.
Well, it works for you guys.
Yeah.
You all live diverse lives, and you all live individual lives, but you're all great people, so it's cool.
Excuse me. Well, anyway, we have a big dog show coming up this weekend again, and this time I'm not going to be in it. I'm going to go enjoy it.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I'm going to go look at little mini-me collies, little Shetland sheepdogs.
Right.
I'm going to look at new dogs.
That sounds great.
So, anyway, thank you, Tommy.
Thanks,
Sandy.
I will
talk to you next week.
Okay.
And have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Okay, bye-bye. So, coming up, we have... Okay, John J. Harper is a retired electronics engineer, computer specialist, and clinical mental health counselor with the U.S. Department of Defense. His formal schooling is in electronics, psychology, and health sciences, and he has worked at such diverse top-secret facilities as the Army Space and Missile Defense Command in Huntsville, Alabama, and the Naval Weapons Center in China Lake, California. Today, he's a researcher, writer, public speaker, and editor-in-chief of Reality Press in California. His focus is on understanding the earth changes as we see manifesting now impacting climate, consciousness, and civilization in solar cycle 24 so that he can help us find creative solutions to them. So we're going to be right back. Stay tuned for John J. Harper. This is Sandy Shore.
You're listening to Happy Hour. No, not that kind of happy hour. The lighten up and smile kind of happy hour. More with Sandy and Sunny Shore in a minute. People visit websites with a goal in mind. To learn more. To buy a product or service. To be convinced or reassured about something. To register for information. Or for any number of other reasons. By understanding your customers' goals and motivations, we can create an intuitive experience to match. An ever-changing online environment, new trends, technologies, and expectations demand that your website be interactive and constantly updated. Customers want to see new information, news, reviews, product and services, success stories, blog entries, press releases, pictures, and so much more. To keep up with the rapid pace of technological change and customer expectations, Creative Momentum offers a full suite of web tools and ideas to enhance your online image. Visit our website at creativemomentum.net for more information on all affordable services we offer. That's creativemomentum.net. Welcome back to Happy Hour with Sandy and Sunny Shore. If you want to find out more about comedy, visit sandyshore.com. And now, here's the lady that wrote the book on comedy, Secrets to Stand-Up Success, best-selling author and comedy coach, Sandy C. Shore. Oh, yeah, and Sunny.
We're back. It's Sandy Shore on the line with me now. I have Dr. Harper. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Harper.
It's my pleasure, Sandy.
Okay. You're coming out of Washington.
Spokane.
Okay. Yeah, I used to live in Seattle.
Aha.
Nice area out there.
Yes, yes. So I was born and raised there, in fact. And then when I retired from the Department of Defense, I moved to Spokane, which in the native tongue means the children of the sun.
Ah, I was reading that. There. Now, you have this, is this your first book that you put out?
Yes, yes. Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century.
Okay, give me a really brief background of how you got to where you're at now, as far as your insight and your being a futurist now.
Well, for me, it was quite a split in my belief systems. My model of reality collapsed in June 1988. I had been an electronics engineer, computer scientist, and pretty left-brain kind of guy from the 1960s through the 1980s. When I had a real good friend of mine, a physicist colleague, die suddenly of a massive heart attack at age 40 en route to his job on a Monday morning in November 1987. His name was George Sebastian Begay III, quite a classy name for a very classy guy. He was a brilliant mathematician and scientist from Louisiana. And George and I had been together for about 17 years as friends, and our families knew each other, and wives and children, et cetera, kind of grew up around each other for all those years. George and I had served in the Army together in Alabama and then in Europe, in Nuremberg, West Germany at the time. Okay. So it's quite a shock when he died suddenly that Monday morning in November 87. Well, fast forward 6-7 months into June 1988, I had applied for a transfer with the government and came back to my native Seattle, Washington area, working for the Navy as an engineer. I just wanted to get away from the grief. I was really having difficulty in the fact that my friend had died so suddenly, and like I said, we were very close. And one June morning in 88, I awoke about 4 a.m. from what I thought was a lucid dream. And standing there at the foot of my bed was my friend George, very much alive. He was a brilliant, light-filled image. I would say now it's a holographic image that was being projected to me, but it was him. It was no doubt about it. I didn't second-guess myself on that fact. He looked at me, he smiled, and I got a telepathic imprint in my mind that everything was fine and for me not to worry about him or anything else with respect to death, that death did not exist. So that's the quick of the story. And then in my book, I lay out from that all the physics and metaphysics that I think we all go through as we start exploring these other realms of existence. And so I covered both the science and the religion in the book, and then conclude with where we're at today with earth changes. And it's been a long journey, but I finally realized that this had a core teaching to it, and that was for me to understand the energy dynamics, the physics of light, basically. And it's so interesting that my friend George was an optics physicist, something I had completely forgot for many years, that his master's degree at the University of Alabama was focused on understanding light. And so, again, I think I got the cosmic giggle going right there when I realized that.
When you're talking light, are you talking about like a laser light? Or when my friend passed over, he imprinted on me how the lights were on the other side, that it's a type of light that I've never seen before.
Yes.
So which kind of light are we speaking about?
Well, all light, I believe, is related, but it has a dimensional aspect to it. That is, if we understand that the fourth state of matter is plasma or magnetic magma, this is exactly what I've concluded, that what we're dealing with when we talk about physics, we're talking about the physical light
Well, I did get an A in science. I wanted to tell you that. So go ahead, because you're. This is okay. Go ahead.
Well, the idea of the fourth state of matter is simply this: you have gas, solids, and liquids. Well, there's a fourth state of matter that we don't talk about. That's really what scientists call dark energy. You know, they say that 1% of the world we see is made out of light, basically, and the 99% is dark energy. There's no light escaping it. Okay.
Okay.
And we know now that is plasma. That think of a neon bulb. Neon bulb works on plasma physics, okay? So when we talk about beautiful pastel colors and the ability to mold light with lasers, as you brought up, into holographic images, we're seeing this in art now and everywhere, that's what we're talking about, Sandy. It's no more difficult than that.
Can information be transferred through light, or is it just energy?
Energy in physics is information, and information is energy. In other words, you cannot separate or tease those two apart. If you can read the energy, this is what science is about, looking at all the spectrums of energy. If you're looking in the night sky with a telescope, you can actually hook up a spectrometer to it and look at the different colors. That's all energy and information being exchanged. And when you step up in a color or step down in a color, you're getting a feeling with that, not only a thought or a feeling, but that's information again. And feeling is information. And here we go with metaphysics, or the sixth sense, intuition.
You know, finally, science and metaphysics are finally meeting each other now.
Yes, they are, and they're converging on the phenomenon of plasma and light.
Okay. Now, I want to move on. You, what is trance? You talk about a trance technique to see the future.
Yes, yes.
Can you tell me what that is?
Okay. What I realized when I had my experience back in June 1988 was, when I came out of this lucid dream state, I knew that I was in an altered state of mind. I didn't call it a trance, so I didn't know what a trance meant, but it was a trance. In other words, my left and right brain hemispheres had unified, so I wasn't thinking thoughts and feeling feelings without the experience. I mean, I was there in this fifth dimension, as I call it now, and in physics, the fifth dimension is light, by the way. The vibration of light is fifth dimensional physics. So having a science background, but also understanding that I had to explain this through a metaphysical or philosophical model, I suddenly grasped the idea that there's more dimensions, there's parallel universes, in other words, and that space itself is alive and conscious, a living being. This goes back now to shamanism. And so trance and shamanic work is becoming very important in the world. In fact, I'm working now with helping Dr. Rick Strassman, who's a psychiatrist who wrote a wonderful book that I highlight in my book called DMT, the Spirit Molecule. And Dr. Strassman has done research at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine, and using DMT. DMT is dimethyltryptamine. Again, no big deal, but what that means is there's a molecule that the spirit is attached to. It's in the pineal gland, which is in the center of the brain. And that when we unify our brain hemispheres, we secrete that DMT, that natural hallucinogenic compound. That's where trance comes into this.
Okay, how do we unite with that? Is it something done unconsciously, or do we have to make a conscious effort?
There's going to be two ways, in my opinion, to accelerate this learning process, and trance is the key idea here. I just want to paint a real quick picture. Think of a mountain and two mining companies on opposite sides of a mountain. And they're both trying to drill to the center of this mountain. And they don't even know each other are drilling towards it. One of them, let's say in this metaphor, are doctors. They're using medical technologies such as Dr. Rick Strassman, using DMT, the pure form of the hallucinogen that's naturally made in our brain, in our blood, and in our lungs, by the way. And there's another group that were the ancients, I believe, that both used drug or pharmacology techniques such as the Mayans and the Egyptians, but they also had a technology based on sacred geometries, the way energy could be formed and transformed through such things as the pyramids. Now, they're kind of drilling into the center of this mountain from the other end. They're not using drugs, and the other side is using drugs. So you got folks like Terence McKenna, for example, the ethnobotanist who worked with DMT in ayahuasca in Brazil. Now, and others, Dr. Jeremy Narby comes to mind from Stanford University, wrote a wonderful book called The Cosmic Serpent, DNA and the Origins of Knowledge. Now, what this boils down to, Sandy, is the fact that what we're working towards is trying to find a way to release DMT in a controlled, natural way, very small doses. We're not talking about tripping. We're not talking about dropping acid. What we're talking about doing is enhancing creativity and healing and literally the ability to see the future.
How do they get, when you're in their lab, what kind of experiments do they do to try to enhance this?
Well, Dr. Strassman has now formed a foundation, and folks can go to my website and see that. I'm highlighting that in my blog this week, called the Cottonwood Research Foundation. Now, what this is, it's an outgrowth of his experiments at the University of New Mexico, where he took 60 volunteers, and he screened them heavily, and most of them had been had experiences with hallucinogenic drugs in college, for example. Some of them were doctors. Some of them were very politically savvy folks holding public office. So their names were held in confidence. But what they did after a real thorough screening was give a trial dose of DMT, pure dimethyltryptamine, through an intravenous setting in a hospital now. And this was done over many, many months and a couple years' worth of research and work. And they took, again, these 60 volunteers from all walks of life, men, women, et cetera, professionals, non-professionals, artists, doctors, et cetera, and they realized there was a common theme running through this trance work. First, of course, they dropped into a deep, deep trance state where they actually were catapulted out of their body. And this is what the shaman, you know, we talk about the shaman as being someone who can walk between worlds. Okay, and we're talking about parallel universes. We're also talking about the ability to communicate telepathically with other life forms, plants, for example.
That's what you're doing that now yourself, right?
What I am doing now is trying to get, you know, the word out and get people comfortable with these ideas and at the same time work with others like Dr. Strassman, who have the clinical expertise and the legal ability to work with these compounds. I am also working, by the way, with folks who do not believe that you need to use the drugs, that there's ways to do a meditative trance technique using sound and other non-drug technologies that can do the same thing, release the DMT safely and under your control.
When it is released, what happens? So your mind just opens, or?
Yeah, it varies on the dosage level. Some people call these kundalini experiences, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some of them call them near-death experiences. Some call it remote viewing. Some call it a spiritual encounter. What we're talking about is, in my opinion, is various levels of this experience. If you were to have the full-on DMT experience, you probably would not come back to your body, and you would move on. And that is something we're not trying to trigger in anybody, of course. We're trying to use this in a wise way. And I think that the goal, though, will be, here's where the beauty of this is. It will trigger spontaneous healing, for example. We know from my experience with near-death experiencers, I've interviewed many, many near-death experiencers, such as Danion Brinkley and others who are, you know, kind of a household name now.
Yeah, Danion's a friend of mine.
Good, good. And I've been watching Daniel for many years. He's been here in Spokane and spoke on numerous occasions, as he has everywhere on the planet. And other folks like Melon Thomas Benedict, who was clinically dead for 90 minutes in a hospice setting.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many, many different people out there who have had different experiences. But the core idea is what I go after in my book and in my research. And so I don't have to label anybody. I don't have to judge anybody's experience. There's a common theme, Sandy, running through this. And this is that we are so much more than what we think we are, that we're just now beginning to evolve to the point where we can tap this higher cosmic consciousness and use it. Use it for creative problem solving. Handle the climate changes, for example. Handle the earth changes.
So when you're saying higher consciousness, are you talking about maybe our higher self that's outside of our body?
Yes.
Or that what do they call that? There's names. Everybody's got different names. Or
yes. Well, there's the thing idea called mind at large, or even our great self. I like the idea of our great self, that we're kind of at the center of a balloon and we're expanding into our greater self. And I believe we're all connected in that balloon, and that what we're doing now is just waking up to the fact that there's a purpose and a design to this beautiful universe that we live in. The universe is user-friendly, and we have to wake up and use what the gifts that we've been given to explore this universe.
And I've learned that if we're not being creative within ourselves, and that's when people get bored and they get suicidal, you know, out of boredom.
Yes. Well, that and the fact that they become overwhelmed in the moment by life's challenges, and they don't have any coping skills because they don't have a large enough view of reality. They don't realize that life is tough, but the going is going to get smoother. And, you know, I've got a little phrase that I've used for many, many years now. You know, the message here now from all of the mystics and the prophets and the shamans is not doom and gloom. It's rather that we're being groomed to bloom.
You know what I'm feeling lately? That all the negativity that I'm hearing, it's like a vibration and I'm not letting it touch me. Moving past it. So first time in my life, I'm feeling very kind of happy and I never knew there was such a word as happy, but I've been in a constant state of almost blissfulness, not attaching to that vibration of negativity because I don't want to deal with it. It's like, it doesn't belong to me.
Yeah. You don't have to deal with it. You just let it go.
Right. Now, you talk about the universe is multidimensional. It's called a torus, you call
Yes, a torus is a bagel or a donut shape, and we know mathematically now that, for example, the work of Stan Tenen in Massachusetts, who has a wonderful foundation, who has studied the ancient text in the Bible in the original Hebrew, for one example here on the torus. Stan's a physicist, mathematician as well. And he knows that the early teachings, for example, in the Old Testament, were stories that have a specific letter configuration that actually is a mathematical formula that will eventually give you, once you decode this and understand it, like he does, it gives you the shape of the torus or the apple in the Garden of Eden, for example, split down the middle. But it's a donut or a bagel, and the entire universe then is a slice, a parallel universe then would be a slice of this donut or this bagel. And so if you can think about smoke rings, blowing smoke rings, and you would realize that this rotational torus would be the entire universe processing our planets, our solar systems, and our lives through them. Go ahead.
Okay, which brings me to the cycle. You're saying it's the end of the cycle at 2012, which everyone is, like, alarmed about, 2012. So this is where... there's a hole in the middle, you call it?
Think of 2012. There's a thing we have in mathematics called strange attractors. This is in fractal geometry. But just think of this bagel or donut. At the center of this donut, there's a hole there. You know, we have black holes like at the center of the galaxy. Those black holes are not empty. They're so full of magnetic power that they actually draw all the light into them. And at the other end of a black hole in physics, we believe there's a white hole. A white hole is where matter is being thrown out of. So just think again of the donut or the bagel, and at one end, we're looking at one end of it, say the black hole end, and we look into the night sky and we see the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and we see this, there's a black hole called the bulge or the central rift. And the point is that all of our information that comes off of us, all the energy that comes off all the planets and all the plants and all the people and all the planets in the solar system and our sun, all that information gets recycled through that black hole, and then it comes through the other end into another universe. Now, the point here is that 2012 is the strange attractor. It's pulling all this information, our mind, our consciousness, our energy, to focus on a single point in time because it's going to be the end of time as we know it.
Oh, this we want to talk a little more about, because now everything goes through the black hole and it comes through in a different dimension, or it comes through in an antimatter universe, or what does it come, the white?
Yes, that's right. It would be a mirror image of this universe. One of the things that some of my near-death experience folks that I've interviewed have told me was they were actually drawn out of the body, then they saw the Earth fall away, then the planets, then the sun. They went through, actually, they believe, some of them, through the center of the sun. I mean, at the speed of light, literally. They ended up, though, stabilizing their trip out of body at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Now, the interesting point is there's beings there that we would call them angels, beings of light, but they could transform even into human shape, human form, if they, you know, were asked to do so. One fellow in my book, you know, he was asked, you know, we can achieve any form that you want that will make you feel comfortable so you're not afraid of us. And he said, oh, no, my God, you're beautiful as a being of light. Don't change just for me, which I thought was so cute, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of it is, that's what we've got to get used to, is the fact that we can come in and out of this body. We're getting ready to realize that the body is this tremendous transformer of energy, and so is the Earth, so is the sun, etc. And ever so often, called the precession of the equinoxes, which happens about every 26,000 years, a total, when the Earth and the sun, we go totally around each other's huge cycle of energy,
mm-hmm.
that we come to a point that the Mayan calendar is now pointing to on December 21st, the winter solstice in 2012. Now, some folks ask me, do you think, John, we're going to wake up on, you know, on the next day of after that, in December 22nd, 2012, and everything will be wonderful? Of course not. But I can tell you that there's a strange attractor going on, that everybody will realize that they have changed. And like you were saying earlier, Sandy, about letting negativity fall off of you,
mm-hmm.
they'll be all and feeling this blissful energy, this feeling of elation, joy at moments. And you go, what's that all about, you know? That's what's going to happen. It's a shift in consciousness now. You can't get there from here, though, without the Earth changes. The Earth is this huge transmuter of energy at this very core, just like our heart energy. Our heart is pumping a magnetic-based blood, iron-rich blood, through our body. So is the Earth, in likewise fashion, pumping huge amounts of energy through molten lava, and it's coming up from the center of the Earth, heating our oceans, heating our atmosphere. We're seeing tremendous atmospheric changes. We're going to see tremendous lightning storms. We're going to see tremendous increase in hurricanes, even beyond what we saw in 2004, 2005.
And
we're going to see tsunamis. These things are real. They're going to happen. They need to happen.
What is cycle 24?
Solar cycle 24, yes. I have a DVD on that, as well as I cover it in my book. The point is that solar cycle 24 is where NASA has defined tremendous changes going on with the sun. And, you know, people talk about global warming now, as it's a fact. Global warming is just the top end of a cycle. We're actually getting ready to go into global cooling.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've noticed since I was a child, the sun used to be yellow, now it's white.
Yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's changing in many, many ways. And, of course, the Mayans, they talk about the coming of the fifth sun. And you talk to another culture, they talk about the fifth sun. And so there was all this talk in the scriptures, the sacred scriptures of every major religion, and the shamans know this better than anyone, that the sun is what creates the conditions of life on all planets within the solar system. And so you change the dynamics of the sun, you're going to change every form of life on every planet throughout this entire solar system. But here's the key. The ancients called the sun behind the sun, or the celestial sun, the black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy, because that's where all the energy was being emitted from. And see, that's why the sun behind the sun, or the center of the Milky Way galaxy, is what the Mayans and the Egyptians both focused on in their culture.
How did these Mayans know? This is just astounding. That
because they traveled out of body, Sandy. They were shamans. They could travel out of body and come back, and they some of them used the drugs, ayahuasca, which, by the way, the ayahuasca, this tropical vine that they brew into a tea that they take for these shamanic journeys, it was called the vine of the soul, or the rope or ladder to the Milky Way galaxy.
You know, I feel like I was alive during that time period. Didn't they do a lot of human sacrifices?
Yes, because they thought by sacrificing iron-rich blood that all that energy and information would go back and calm the sun, and so that the solar cycles would not be so severe.
Isn't
so they sacrificed to the sun. Just like the Native American sun dance.
Oh, okay. Kind of barbaric, but considering...
Barbaric, but with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, self-sacrifice for a greater good.
Very simple-minded.
Yes.
What, now, you call yourself now a futurist. How did you transform into a futurist? And is there something that, in particular, that we can do?
Yeah, well, yes. What happened, I was a traditional electronics engineer and scientist, research scientist for the Department of Defense for about 25 years. And after I started researching all this, I realized I had to get smart about altered states of mind because, again, I went into a spontaneous trance when I saw my dead friend who was not dead. and it shook me so bad, I started thinking about how can I re-enter that state of mind. So that's part of my journey. I started studying then, going to graduate school again, and studying clinical hypnotherapy, and became a clinical hypnotherapist and worked as a clinical mental health counselor, in fact, with the Navy before I retired. I went from an engineer, gave up a pretty good salary and a, you know, kind of a prestigious job, to go work in the medical clinic at the U.S. Navy Hospital Clinic in Keyport, Washington, and that's where I retired from. And I was using biofeedback, and I was trying to find ways to employ this knowledge in a carefully, planned way. And so I studied hypnosis, hypnotherapy, and then I started realizing that there was technologies out there in biofeedback using sound and light that could alter one's mind. And again, in my blog, there's a product called Vantage Quest 6 that I offer to the public if they're interested in purchasing it. And it uses cutting-edge technology using sound, and you just, you know, put the headphones on and you listen to this sound, and there's a voice speaking there. It's my good friend Carlisle Berquist, who studied under Stan Grippner at the Saybrook Institute in San Francisco, and also took part in the ayahuasca ceremonies in Brazil. And Carlisle is actually a musician, played for everyone. I mean, he's been all over the planet for 30 years, kind of semi-retired now in Kansas, actually, on his farm. But the point is that Vantage Quest 6 is one of the safe ways that I recommend that you can get into this trance state. You need to practice with it. It's not going to happen maybe. Could happen on your next breath, but it depends on what your level of comfort, and you need to work into it. This is a safe way now to get into trance. So what do you do, though, when you get into trance? You don't sit there and meditate on your navel. What you do is think about the things in your life that you're troubled with, and this will help resolve. You'll get dreams, in other words. You'll get flashes of insight from using this technology. You'll get problem-solving skills you never thought you had. You'll get answers to questions that you've always been bothered about. What does this mean? What does that mean?
And basically,
that type of
all the information is already stored in us. We just have to tap it.
Exactly. We have to align up to it or resonate with it.
I heard many, many years ago my teacher was talking about sound, that sound can do most of the healing. It's like, for example, there are certain tones, like the Death March has got a certain tone to
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
Because that's how, because we feel so much when we listen to music.
Yes.
And I think this is something that's coming right around the corner. And
well, it is, and this technology is the cutting edge. In other words, you buy some of this CDs, and what you get is a beautiful sound of waterfall or nature. That's good, and that can work for some people. Other things, you get crystals. You can get crystal bowl, you know, frequencies. Those definitely just really rev up the chakra systems. Mm-hmm. But this technology will rock you to your core, and some people it's too much. It's too strong, but you can tone it down. You can turn the tone down. It'll sound like literally like a helicopter landing in your head when things get going on this CD.
It actually sounds like kind of fun.
It for me, I tell you what, it worked. That's why I represent it. If it didn't work, I don't need it. I honestly don't need the money that way. I don't need to do that. So I'm not pushing a product. I'm just saying this works, and I represent it.
I want to let everybody know that they can call in if they want to ask Dr. Harper a question. I'm going to give the call-in number real quick. U.S. is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canada, 888-815-9756. So feel free to just butt right in. There's, now as far as your, it's real interesting how the human body is the same as the earth.
Yes.
So the earth's going through changes, so it would only make sense that we're evolving, our bodies are evolving. Now when I had a visitation by three off-planet beings back in the late 80s, early 90s, they told me they were the future human beings. Those were like the grays. That
yes.
was a really interesting. We're going way off the topic here.
No, we're not. No, we're not.
Oh, we're not? Okay. And they downloaded in my head thousands of symbols. And, and they just float around in my head all day long. And they're just vibrations. But how, you know, and they're like 3,000 years in the future. So maybe the humans evolve into hairless creatures. I mean, this is really interesting.
Here, let me help us with this.
Okay.
One of the things that Dr. Rick Strassman, again, a board-certified psychiatrist, did with the DMT studies at University of New Mexico, he had no idea that this idea of alien abduction that was being studied by Dr. John Mack at Harvard University had anything to do with DMT or reality in general. What he came to realize, what Rick finally realized and admitted to, is that this alien abduction phenomenon, the experience of the grays, was something that was going on in the university hospital setting with his volunteers. And he had many of them come back and talk about what the grays were doing. They talked about the technology. They talked about the future. Yes, Sandy, you're right on target. And I talk about this in my book. I explain how this works, UFOs, alien contact. I actually got a wonderful letter from Dr. John Mack at Harvard, and I gave him an early draft my manuscript for my book, and he came back about 2 months later. I thought, you know, I'd never hear from this distinguished professor at Harvard. He said, John, I am writing you because everything you've written about in your book resonates with my research on alien abduction phenomenon. Blew my mind.
I think they are our future. It's like I haven't been abducted, they said, because I have their DNA. So, I mean,
everything's open for discussion. There are many ways to look at this phenomenon. But if you remember that if we're talking about a universe, and the shape of this torus or donut, and they're, near-deathers have told me that when they were out of body, they have seen there's an infinite number of big bangs going on simultaneously. They have always existed and always will because the energy is continually processed and changed by information. So everything has existed and everything will continue to exist. Things change when we decide through our belief systems as a people, as a culture, as a civilization to change them. That's why it's important that all of us get on board, for example, and envision a better future and want a better future and strive for a better future, for peace, for example, for love, for example, for things that make us feel good, for example, and get off this silliness about fighting each other. There's no Democrats, Republicans, there's no, you know, this, that, or the other. It's just one human being that's trying to get along on one planet.
Let me ask you, when we do hit that time, 2012,
yes.
I mean, we're going to wake up. It's going to be almost like the same day, but our consciousness is going to, what is it, the veils are going to be dropping? Or, well, you know, I'm just real curious.
The apocalypse, the biblical apocalypse has been really it's just been a tremendously detrimental idea because apocalypse is the true thing that's happening. Apocalypse means the unveiling. It does not mean war. It means uncovering what is hidden. That's what, look it up in a dictionary. Apocalypse means unveiling or uncovering. So what is unveiled? What is uncovered? It's that we're multidimensional beings and we're now going to see fifth dimensionally. That means that we're going, as I say, to the outer reaches of inner space. We're going to realize that our minds and our feelings create the reality that we see in front of us. However,
bingo.
So meditation is important. So trance is important. So the idea of not listening to negativity, as you were saying, is important. The idea of not letting someone split your mind like the media. Do not say, you know, over here's the kingdom, over there's the kingdom. The kingdom is within you. Now, do we hear that from some carpenter over in the Middle East 2,000 years ago? We're still trying to figure that out. But it is. That's because that's what's inside of us ultimately manifests outside of us.
That's like metaphysics 101, and people need to live that and realize it. Even the weather cycles we're coming up against, that is all mental too, right? We create that.
That atmosphere above us, the magnetosphere, is what we're talking about here now, the new sphere. Catholic theologian Pierre Teilhard de Chardin wrote wonderful books about 50 years ago. He was a paleontologist, somebody who studied all the earth phenomena, natural sciences, also a theologian. But what Deschardin really should be noted for is this idea of the new sphere. Nous in Greek means mind. He said there's a mental sphere surrounding the earth. We're all contributing to this growth of this mind at large, and we are. And so what's happening is, on any given day when the atmosphere changes, when the weather changes, that's a perturbation in the field, we would say, in the atmosphere. And that, yeah, absolutely, that could be because a bomb blew up in Baghdad yesterday, killed 53 people. Yes, does it impact the immediate environment? Maybe not. Remember chaos theory. What's the classic example? A butterfly flaps his wings in the Sea of Japan, and a tornado touches down in Kansas. So chaos theory, but what is the bottom line truth to chaos theory? Chaos theory says that when systems become so chaotic, they never collapse, they grow into a new, higher order of being.
It evolves.
It evolves, it learns, it's growing, it's learning, and from its experiences of all of us. But when we destroy life around us, what we're doing is setting up that butterfly effect, and so we're creating chaos somewhere else. But on the other hand, when we do good, we're creating good somewhere else too.
The thing that's so frustrating is it's the corporations doing the destroying. People on a house by house basis are doing their part by recycling and doing what they can. So it's really frustrating. So I don't understand how we can get out of this.
How we get out of that?
Yeah,
is awakening to what you just shared with us, and then not buying the products that corporation is producing.
Mm-hmm.
Power to the people, Sandy.
I know. We're the ones that put those people in office, and they're the ones
withdraw our financial support from everything that we do not believe in, and you watch the system transform. And you know what the blessing will be? Not only will these companies not go out of business, they will begin to hire the most creative people on the planet to transform their product into something good, and they'll be doubly blessed for doing it.
And you know what? I have a feeling in my gut that's what's going to start happening.
Yes, absolutely.
Because after this big China thing, you know, with their products, and, you know, I think we've had enough. But
Well, not only that, what we'll do is take back control of our destiny by being creative and by being responsible co-creators of the planet, and we'll actually help China evolve. We'll actually help all companies
evolve. This feels good. This, what you're talking about feels really right and good. You know what I wanted to bring up before we go is, we still have a little time left, but the crop circles.
Yes.
That, I mean, you know, some of them are fake and some of them are real, so that's right. Not what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about what... what's revealing about them, and from your point of view.
Yeah, well, in my book, I share a few of those, and what's happening with those is that the Earth is a great living being, and that, again, remember, the energy is processed from the core of the Earth outwards to the surface and then into the north and south pole electromagnetic fields, again, this magnetosphere. Now, that is our thoughts and feelings always being processed through the center of us, through our heart and our brain, the brain, you know, basically is trying to make sense of things. We got a left and right hemisphere. Those are two magnets in polar opposites. But when we unify our heart and then unify our mind through our heart, what we're getting is coherent fields of energy. Now, when that doesn't happen, we get dis-ease, don't we? And we get symptoms. The crop circles are the same phenomenon. When the energy is so out of balance as it is now, you get literally, I call them tattoos. These crop circles are tattoos that are showing the sacred geometric forms of energy that's coming up through the fields of grain and radiating back into, you know, the atmosphere itself. And so once you put that puzzle together, once you look at all the crop circles and start putting the puzzle together, you realize that you're looking again at the Platonic solids, these five sacred shapes of geometry that created the pyramids and Stonehenge, and on it goes, the Central American structures down in, you know, in Mexico. The Mayans again, Egyptians again. We're talking about Native Americans and shamanic rituals again. We're talking about this great big puzzle coming together, and it's all around energy and the flow of it and how it's transformed.
It's the more you're talking, the more I'm really seeing that the universe is very mental. It's all mental.
The Greeks, the Pythagoreans said, God is number. So once you understand, though, that it's very elegant, it's very simple. Our human mind keeps complicating things by not understanding, and that it goes in cycles too. We go from four ages, from the Iron Age to the Bronze Age to the Silver Age to the Golden Age. We're just now coming out of the Iron Age, basically. I mean, we had steam engines, locomotives, etc. We're coming rapidly now, though. You know, in the Information Age, we're coming into really a Silver Age that'll turn golden, but the point is, everything under the sun is in cycles, and solar cycle 24 is about this huge transformation in consciousness that will change everything, money, politics, religion, science. It will change the way we look at the world and ourselves in it.
Why is it called solar cycle 24?
That is what the scientists have, since they started collecting data on the 11-year cycles of sunspots, which really are two 11-year cycles, 22-year total, solar cycle 24 began last month. Officially, NASA found that the sun had flipped its poles and that in 2012 we're looking at a peak solar cycle that could very well be a tremendously destructive cycle of energy that's projected towards the Earth, called a coronal mass ejection, a CME. It's just a huge plasma ball, again, of light that could hit the Earth, burn off the ozone, and cause huge gamma ray bursts of energy to strike the surface of the Earth and impact DNA, etc. But I don't think, personally, I don't think it's going to be that destructive. I'm really more optimistic than I've ever been, But it all depends on waking up, because again, the feedback loop, if we can get enough people to wake up, Sandy, and just be peaceful and to meditate and pray on this idea of this energy that we're talking about, this goodness, this wonderful feeling of bliss. We're not talking about just spacing out. We're talking about being the peace that we want to see.
Yes. I'm wondering if there's enough people that want to see that, because there's so much negativity. People thrive on it.
They want to, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know why they want to do it. They're stuck. They're trapped in the lower chakra energy levels, and they just become cynical, and they become depressed, and they become disappointed. They don't realize how powerful we all are once we come together.
No, that's a really huge point you make there, because it is. I know people. There's been so many experiments with people coming together, thinking one thought, and changing things just like that.
Yes.
It's an actual wonderful planet. It's amazing that where people are so stuck in their belief systems that they can't open their minds to, you know, new possibilities, evolving themselves into a new type of human being.
Yeah, yes. In fact, I say in my book, I used a very similar line of thought. I said, there's only one drug that I know of that is almost just you cannot heal yourself from, and that's your belief system.
I've come to that conclusion after all my studies, that we are what we believe in.
The belief is the strongest drug in existence. And once we get stuck in it, it takes many years, if not many lifetimes, to free oneself. We get locked into scientific dogma, religious dogma. If we just, you know, give away our power, so to speak, then we're
trapped. Know what? Do you realize that our time is up, and that there's so many topics that I still wanted to get into, and I'd love to have you back on.
I'd love to be back on.
There's one thing I have to ask you. My dog Sunny Sky has this little magic 8-ball made in China. And if you want to ask him a question, come here.
Cool.
So, okay, Sonny. Ask my dog. Drum roll, please. Boo.
Okay, who's going to win the presidential election in 2008?
Okay, the answer is you may rely on it.
I'll take it.
Okay. That means someone will.
I love it. That's the right answer.
Okay, so your website, johnjharper.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful evening, everybody. This is Sandy Shore. This is Happy Hour. We'll be back next Thursday. Everyone, thank you for listening. Okay, good night. Dr. Harper, thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll talk again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.